is crackling, everybody. Welcome on into the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by NumberFire. That is right here on NumberFire.com. And of course, the NumberFire Podcast Network, as we are taking a look ahead at the conference championships for NFL DFS and breaking down the players we want to target for this weekend. My name is Jim Sonnes. I am a senior writer and analyst for NumberFire.com, joined here as always by Brandon Gandula. He is a senior editor and analyst for NumberFire. Brandon, a couple of super fun games on tap for this weekend. We got good offenses, not the best defenses in the world. So I'm pretty pumped for things on Sunday. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited for both of these games. They could go sort of, you know, either way for the most part. The spreads are pretty close. The over-unders are pretty high for being playoff games. In the playoffs, scoring's generally down. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that I'm ready to embrace some variance and think outside the box this week.
Yeah, I think that when I'm looking at this slate initially, what I want to do is avoid cash games. I think that that's fairly yeah. obvious for a two-game slate. But for tournaments, what I want to do from like a bankroll management perspective is find the lowest dollar tournament I can find that has a lot of entries and just plug in as many combinations as I can, because, as you said, there's a lot of variance here. And I think there are core plays that I like, but the question that I have for myself is, can I nail the complementary pieces within that core? And that's why I want to go low dollar, as many entries as possible. What kind of vibe are you getting overall from this slate as far as, you know, your strategy from a bankroll management perspective goes?
Yeah, I can definitely see that approach. And I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean you just play an unlimited bankroll and play every player. Right. That's kind of the go-to sort of argument against some, you know, some high volume players. They can just play everybody. It's not the case. It's that they build solid lineups, they have a good core, and they rotate in so that they can hit on that right core. I mean, you can play James Devlin, you can play as many lineups as you need to play some James Devlin, but that's just not plus expected value over the long haul. So, I mean, I'm with you. I think a lot of lineups might be necessary this week because these teams can spread things out. But yeah, it's not just about playing every lineup and playing everybody.
Right. I think the positive of, like, if you do like a three max tournament where you can only do three entries, is that like the winning lineup is less likely to be absurd than it is like a 150 max entry. So like there are pluses to smaller entry limits. But for me personally, I just want to get those combinations. So I think, you know, find a tournament that suits you best, you know, for what you're looking for. Again, for me, it's low dollar tournaments with a lot of lineups if I can do that. But, you know, figure out what suits you, you know, how much you want to invest in this slate and, go from there. But I think we have two pretty interesting games. Brandon, before we dive into the Rams at the Saints, the first game on this slate, I kind of want to pick your brain about your overall thoughts on these two games. Because when I look at these two games personally, I guess my initial thought was that I was kind of surprised the home teams weren't favored by more, which leads me to think that I want Saints and I want Chiefs, and I want to have my heaviest investment to be in those two teams. And if I were betting this, I think I'd be taking both the home teams minus the points. What about for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, look, if I would cover, or I would bet both home teams to cover if I had to place a bet. But, you know, according to Sports Insights, it seems like a higher percentage of the bets on the Rams-Saints game are on the Rams to cover. And that's a bit surprising to me. It's about 55-45 in that regard. And the inverse is true. About 55% of the bets are on the Chiefs to cover in that second game. But I think my first sort of top-down view is that the home teams do sort of get out ahead and play from ahead.
I think that the sense I'm getting from where the public is betting these games is kind of overreactionary to what happened last week, where the Patriots looked awesome and the Saints struggled a bit out of the gate against the Eagles. And I think we saw last week the pitfalls of overreacting to what we saw the previous week, because the Colts were a very popular public team. The Chargers were a popular public team, but they went on the road and things changed pretty dramatically. Our larger sample on the Saints is that they're very good when they're playing indoors. They're playing indoors. They're at home this weekend. Our sample on the Patriots defense is that they are not nearly as good on the road as they are at home. And so I think if I had to pick a reason that the public is leaning towards the Rams and the Rams, at least, is that I think it's an overreaction to the way the Saints looked last week. I guess I don't know if that's me being too harsh to the public. I don't know. I guess, what are your thoughts on that as far as the betting and where the public is going goes?
Yeah, I mean, that could definitely be the case. The Eagles got out ahead early in that one. You know, off the top of my head, I think it was 14-0, and then I don't think they scored after that. And New Orleans just sort of
have like they didn't have like a first down in the first quarter, it seemed like.
Yeah, it was like that first quarter that made the Saints look a little bit rough, but then obviously they came back and the game wasn't really. I mean, the Saints were just a better team than the Eagles. So I think it could be partially reactionary for sure. And look, the Chiefs, I mean, you can say that the Patriots looked great, but so did the Chiefs against the Colts. I mean, I think that, I just think that this is a game where, look, it's Tom Brady, it's Bill Belichick. You can throw in all these narratives, but if you just look at the teams, I do think that the Chiefs hold enough of an edge where that can be mitigated. And as you alluded to already, the Patriots, their defense doesn't really travel that well. You know, I guess put another way, their defense at home is so good that they're just not nearly as good on the road. And you have to be very, very good if you're going to limit the Kansas City Chiefs.
Exactly. Patrick Mahomes, quite good at this football thing. And we'll talk about that game in a second. But first, let's break down the Rams and the Saints. The total here has dropped down a half a point. It's 56.5, open at 57. The line has stayed steady at the Saints, -3.5. And as Brandon mentioned, that is despite having a little bit more public money on the Rams and the Saints. Not enough necessarily to swing the line, but it's worth noting that the line has not budged, at least at FanDuel's sportsbook. Injuries to note for this game. The big one is Sheldon Rankins tore his Achilles tendon during the Saints win against the Eagles. That is huge because he is a huge person and a really good football player. We'll talk about the implications of that in the game breakdown. Also of note, Todd Gurley was removed from the Rams injury report on Wednesday. Sean McVay had said he expected Gurley to be limited, but Gurley got into full practice, not limited. He is good to go, and I like that quite a bit. Brandon, from a DFS perspective, what is your initial thought on this game here between the Rams and the Saints?
Yeah, so bets on the over here, which is always something that you can just sort of look at to get a gauge on the public. Bets on the over are trending down a bit, but still the majority of the bets are on the over. It's around, you know, 55 to 60%. It was a little bit higher before that. But again, my first impression here is that the Saints take advantage at home, even without Sheldon Rankins. They can get pressure on Jared Goff, who just struggles under pressure and on the road. Overall, I think that quarterback discrepancy, for as much as I like Goff as a player and the Rams as a team, I think that's enough of a difference for the Rams to play from behind. Of course, both of these matchups have already been played out earlier on in the year. Some key players were active who won't be active this week or vice versa. So take that for what you will. But, you know, Jared Goff was 7 of 14 for 100 yards, had two drops when thrown from under pressure back in that Week 9 game. Ended up with 391 yards, boosted by a lot of long, long receptions. He was 5 of 8 on throws at least 16 yards downfield. So I think there's a path for the Rams definitely to keep it close. But again, my first impression is that Jared Goff struggles on the road and under pressure enough that they play from behind.
Yeah, I think that the injury note there is big because we did see this game, but it's a totally different, I guess, it's a totally different scenario now than it was back in Week 9 because the Rams have lost Cooper Kupp since then, and they've gained Aqib Talib on the defensive side. The Saints have regained Ted Ginn, but as mentioned, they lost Sheldon Rankins. They also did not have Marcus Davenport for that game. And he isn't talked about because he didn't play every snap, but that's big for their pass rush. And if you're going to disrupt Jared Goff, you're going to have to get a pass rush on him. Let's talk about that Sheldon Rankins injury here super quickly, because it's a pretty big one. If we look at the Saints defense without Sheldon Rankins this year, this is according to the Quant Edge, they've allowed 3.83 yards per carry and a 5.3% sack rate. With Rankins, their yards per carry against goes down to 3.41, so a change of 0.4 yards per carry, and their sack rate with Rankins is 9.2%, so a huge difference there. Rankins generally plays between 60 to 70% of the snaps, so he's an impactful player. Davenport doesn't play as many snaps. He plays around 40% of the snaps, but when he is out there, they've allowed 3.33 yards per carry, 8.9 passing yards per attempt, and an 8.8% sack rate. Without him, the sack rate has gone down to 7.3%, but they've actually allowed more yards per attempt. Davenport generally is out there mostly on pass-specific downs, which is why his snap rate is around 40%. Rankins tends to leave when that's the case. So I think the biggest impact, Brandon, of gaining Davenport compared to that first game and losing Sheldon Rankins is that it's probably going to have a negative impact on the Saints' rush defense, which should keep Todd Gurley involved and potentially allow him to be more efficient. But I think the pass rush will still be largely effective. What are your thoughts on these two guys here as it pertains to the Saints' defense?
Yeah, I think when it comes to running backs, matchup matters to me, but I think if we're looking at a single game, it's more about that game script. Mm-hmm. And we saw both CJ Anderson and Todd Gurley be involved heavily and pretty early. It wasn't like CJ Anderson just started getting involved in the second half or anything like that last week. So it does matter to me, but it's more about game script, and it really just comes down to, do the Rams keep it close for the first quarter or two? Do they play from ahead? Do they play from behind? And again, I think they play from behind regardless of these defensive line injuries or returns here. Overall, I think that CJ Anderson is going to be someone that is going to be over-owned if they play from behind. But I think that Todd Gurley's game script agnostic, game script proof, that is to say. So I like this for Todd Gurley regardless, even of the game script.
I think it might be better for him if they're behind.
Is that could be. It could be, because then CJ Anderson, you can't imagine CJ Anderson will play much. He ran 17% of the routes last week compared to 66% for Gurley.
Yeah, Gurley played 57% of the snaps in the divisional round, 16 carries and 2 targets for him. Anderson, 23 carries and 1 target. Now, it sounded on the broadcast as if they were saying that was because the Rams wanted Gurley's conditioning to get back up. He has a game beneath his belt now, getting in full practices on Wednesday already. I don't think the conditioning would be as much of a concern this week, and they're not going to be playing from ahead. The one concern I have about Anderson is that watching that game, on their first scoring drive, it was all Gurley initially, but then once they got to the money runs, inside the red zone, it was CJ Anderson. And I think there is a very real chance still that Anderson pilfers goal line carries from Todd Gurley, because he looks like Sheldon Rankins essentially at this point, which might be effective on the goal line. So I think that's the one concern I have with Gurley. But overall, I think the usage for Gurley this weekend should be better. So if I make a lineup where I assume the Saints win, and I have my Breeze in there, my Kamara, I would still be very inclined to use Todd Gurley in that lineup to get 2 targets last week. And as Brandon mentioned, he ran a good number of routes. I think Gurley is a pretty solid play. Are you going to use Anderson in lineups where you assume the Rams win, Brandon, or is he a guy you're probably just going to try to avoid altogether?
Oh, I could see using him, but I'm going to have to take a lot more care than I normally do. I always tend to wait too long to go through and build my lineups. Yeah. This is a week where these game scripts, sort of playing out all the scenarios in your head while you build lineups, that's going to be important. So I will have some CJ Anderson lineups because, as you mentioned, he did get used in the red zone. Although, I never know if you know, sometimes these running backs get a breather after they've had like 60 yards on a drive, and then the spell back comes in just because of the, you know, the breather aspect of things. I don't know what the coaches are ever really thinking, but he still could score. I mean, their implied team total is still pretty high. So they're going to score touchdowns almost assuredly, and C.J. Anderson could definitely get some of those. So I will have C.J. Anderson, but it will be in those lineups where I assume the Rams do either keep it very, very close or somehow win.
So let's talk about keeping with the running backs here and talk about the Saints running backs against the Eagles. Heading into that game, we had talked about how the usage on Alvin Kamara increased during the playoffs last year, and I think we saw the same thing in the divisional round against the Eagles, because Kamara in that game, 16 carries to go with 4 targets while playing 69% of the snaps. Mark Ingram had 9 carries to go with 2 targets and a 40% snap rate. So the two were on the field together for a good number of snaps. And the thing that I like about the way they used Kamara in that game is that he was lined up out wide for most of the snaps where he was on the field with Mark Ingram. So I think, I mean, like, it's not a hot take to say I love Alvin Kamara, but like, he might be my favorite running back on the slate straight up. And I think he's my second favorite when you consider price behind Damian Williams. What are your thoughts on Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram?
Yeah, that's what I have. I think Kamara is my favorite running back of the week, but price considered, I would still have to put Damian Williams first. That by default makes Kamara my secondary back.
Things can't end well if we're on the exact same page here.
So I love Kamara this week. I love the snaps. Again, you talked about it, where his snaps went up in the playoffs last year. And he ran 63% of the pass routes according to Pro Football Focus last week. That ranked him 4th on the team. He had 4 targets. We know that he can get peppered with targets in certain games. And really, other than Michael Thomas, not to jump ahead to wide receivers, and Ted Ginn, I mean, he was the third option for this team. So you factor in the snaps at running back in the backfield and out wide and just targets out of the backfield, I think that Alvin Kamara, there's really not too many scenarios where he doesn't produce something for us this week.
Mark Ingram or C.J. Anderson?
You know, that's a tough one because I actually went through and you know, I had time to rank these running backs this week.
Oh.
Not something that I normally...
Small slate.
What's that?
That's the luxury of a small slate.
Yeah. And I got down to like 6 or 7 and I was like, C.J. Anderson or Mark Ingram?
Yeah.
My head kind of says Mark Ingram, but my heart wants to rank C.J. Anderson a little bit above him.
I agree with you on Ingram because I think, like we mentioned, if we had to, you know, place a bet here, it would be that we'd want the Saints minus the points, and that implies they win. Last week against the Eagles, they were playing from behind for a good part of that game, and Ingram, 40% snap rate still. That's really encouraging. So I think Ingram's team is more likely to win. He is $400 less expensive from a salary perspective than C.J. Anderson, and I just like his team more. So and the other part too is Anderson's role could reduce if it was conditioning that was a concern for Todd Gurley. So I think there are enough factors that have me say, give me Mark Ingram. But I think if I go Mark Ingram, I have to stack him with the Saints defense almost every time.
Yeah.
Just because that game script would have to be in place essentially.
Yeah. I mean, Ingram did run 35% of the pass routes again, according to Pro Football Focus. That's not terrible. Right. C.J. Anderson by comparison was 17% last week. Mark Ingram can get targets. It's not, of course, his forte, but it can happen. The Saints, again, you also have to factor in that scoring equity. You would, or at least the way that we're viewing things, is that the Saints would score more than the Rams. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely also in Mark Ingram's favor as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the big question with Alvin Kamara is not him relative to Gurley, because we both have him above Gurley, but it's where do you view him relative to Michael Thomas? Because if you spend up on Alvin Kamara, you can do it. Like, you can build a lineup with Kamara and Thomas, but it's a bit more cumbersome to do so, especially the value wide receiver. You can definitely do it, but it is not overly easy to do that. So we have to talk about Kamara versus Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas, in games where Ted Ginn has been active, has had just massive target shares. He has 31% of the team's targets, 24% of their deep targets, and 33% of their red zone targets. And I think that it makes sense anecdotally because Ginn stretches the defense, allows Thomas to just eat underneath, and that's going to be beneficial for him. So Thomas, really fun. I think if I had to pick, though, Brandon, between Kamara and Thomas, I would lean Alvin Kamara because the Rams get Aqib Talib back. And Talib, when he's been on the field this year, the Rams have allowed 7.21 passing yards per attempt compared to 8.83 without him, according to the Quant Edges injury tool. So if I had to choose between Kamara or Thomas, I think I'm prioritizing Kamara in more lineups, but I like both quite a bit. Where do you sit on the Kamara versus Thomas debate?
Yeah, so Thomas is, you know, the number one receiver on the slate. I think it's his workload
wide margin, at least.
Yeah, it's pretty wide. But with that being said, I still think I'm with you where I prefer would have to prioritize Alvin Kamara simply because there are, I want to say, like, off the top of my head, five sort of value wide receivers who have a path to success.
And there are no value running backs with a path to success.
There are, I think, five running backs I'm somewhat comfortable with or actively like.
Yeah.
There are about 10 wide receivers. I know you have to roster an extra receiver, but I'm going to be rostering, you know, I'm going to flex a running back. So I'm going to play three of those five running backs in every lineup. So I think by default, I have to prefer Kamara.
Yeah. I would agree with that for the exact same reasoning. I think that your logic there is very sound. And so I guess, like, I think it just makes too much sense to go with Kamara over Thomas. That's not to say Thomas is a bad play. Like, Thomas is a very good play. As Brandon mentioned, he's the best wide receiver on this slate. And to me, at least, he is in a tier of his own, even with Aqib Talib being back. But I think given the construct of this slate, with what you have at running back and with what you have at wide receiver, I'd rather, you know, spend up for the running back in Alvin Kamara. Let's talk about those value receivers. One of them, of course, Ted Ginn, so close to a big game last week with that deep ball on the first play. But in the games he has played this year, 16% of the team's targets, 38% of their deep targets. And last week, he ran, I believe it was 28 routes, according to Pro Football Focus. Keith Kirkwood ran 33 routes and played 69% of the snaps. Kirkwood is, he got just two targets. One of those was a touchdown. I would be interested in Kirkwood, and I will use him, but the problem I have is that he is just $200 cheaper than Ted Ginn. He is $5,100. Ted Ginn is $5,300. I favor Ginn there. The other guy to discuss here among value receivers in this game is Josh Reynolds. Josh Reynolds checks in for this week at $5,400 in games since Cooper Kupp got hurt. Exact same market share as Ginn at 16%. He has 29% of the team's deep targets and 23% of the red zone targets. So I think Ginn is a bigger bet for yardage upside because Reynolds hasn't, I don't think he's top 90 yards this year. Whereas Ginn could absolutely get there, but Reynolds is a better bet for a touchdown. So, Brandon, got a couple of value receivers here in Josh Reynolds, Ted Ginn, and Keith Kirkwood. What are your thoughts on those three guys?
Yeah, I'll start with Ginn. He ran 70% of the routes last week, played 52% of the snaps, had those seven targets, had 119 air yards, and did get an end zone target. So that's a very, very good workload for his price. Keith Kirkwood, by comparison, had an extra, you know, 17 percentage points in terms of snaps. I don't actually have the snap numbers pulled up. I just have the percentages. But mm-hmm. He ran 83% of the routes. Again, just those two targets and eight air yards. But he did have an end zone target, of course, which he did score on. You know, factoring in that deep work, which I think is much more reliable than red zone work, you have to prioritize Ted Ginn and his three deep targets over Keith Kirkwood. As for Reynolds, he actually ran the same number of routes as Robert Woods, played 87% of the team's snaps, had 55 air yards in his four targets, two deep targets. We've sort of talked about it before on the podcast that he does get, you know, deep looks in this offense. And the Rams ran 11 personnel, so three receivers on 96% of their snaps, according to Sharp Football Stats, last week. So he's going to be on the field. And if they do trail, he's going to sort of eventually get some looks. And again, I know that I prefer deep looks and just general targets to red zone looks. But Reynolds does get deep looks, and he does get red zone work. He didn't get it last week, but he definitely is in play for me.
Would you rank him below Ginn?
Yeah, it's got to be Ginn, Reynolds, Kirkwood for me.
I would agree with that as well.
But it's going to be Ted Ginn at first for everybody as well. So
yeah, that's true. And I think that like Kirkwood's going to be the lower own way to get access to the Saints. I just don't know if that's a big enough incentive for me to do it. I mean, like I'm going to play him, but I don't think I'm going to like have a ton of him.
I wanted to play him so much last week, and I talked myself out of it. But
yeah, I mean, he didn't really do a whole lot, even with the touchdown.
Right.
At least you're not kicking yourself too much, but
yeah. So I'm probably more inclined to play him than other people are, and you'd have to think Ted Ginn's ownership is going to be pretty high this week.
Yeah, it should be, but it's going to. So I think that that's the correct assumption there. Let's talk about the Rams' passing offense quickly. We've talked a couple times about how Jared Goff struggles on the road this season. 10 touchdowns, 9 picks, and 0.09 passing net expected points per dropback, and league average is 0.12, so Goff has been a below-average passer on the road this year, but a lot of that was due to just one game. He, in that Chicago game, terrible. Like, he had 4 picks in that game. He was awful. That game was on the road against a better pass defense than the Saints, and it was a very cold very cold game. I don't generally care about that because it's more about wind than temperatures, but people bring it up with Goff because he's a Cali guy. But if you exclude that Chicago game, Goff had 0.20 passing net expected points per dropback on the road with a 51% success rate, 10 touchdowns, 5 picks. So in general, I don't think our expectations for him should be as low as some people are billing them to be. And I think I can justify spending down on Goff at $8,000 for this week. It also means I am interested in the Rams' passing offense. If we look at them, since Cooper Kupp got hurt, Robert Woods leads in target share at 23%. Brandon Cooks just behind him at 22%. Same number of deep balls, and Cooks has a slight edge in the red zone. But for this specific game, I would expect Marshawn Lattimore to see a lot of Brandon Cooks, whereas Robert Woods will be running from the slot because Cooper Kupp is not out there. So, Brandon, two questions. Which Rams pass catcher do you prefer? I go Woods. And how often can you justify going Jared Goff? Because I think I like him more than consensus, shocker, but I like the savings he gives me. So thoughts on the Rams pass catchers and thoughts on Goff.
Starting with the pass catchers, it's like the same process for me every single week. The safe high floor option is Robert Woods. The ceilingest sort of option is Brandon Cooks, and then like the sneaky.
Did you say option. Ceilingest?
Yeah,
I like it. It's not
like the sneakiest option is Reynolds, and I think that he will be pretty much overlooked with not only Ted Ginn around that price, but also Sammy Watkins. So I think that Reynolds is certainly viable. As for Goff, you raised some good points. He played 2 of his 3 worst road games right after his return from a bye. He played Detroit. He was bad there. And then played Chicago, was bad there as well. But other than that, I mean, in his road games, he's been pretty much stellar otherwise. So in 8 road games so far this year, he's been at least 0.23 passing net expected points. So more than twice league average in 5 of those 8. And again, 2 of the ones where he wasn't came right after his return from a bye whenever he struggled pretty hard. So I think that's forgivable. The bigger problem for me is just the pressure and the actual pressure rate, not the pressure of playing in a big game. I'm not a huge believer in that, although it does probably matter. But
sure.
I think that his savings and the path to upside for him, because we did see it whenever they played the first time around, again, 391 yards, had a lot of long receptions there. If you actually look at the long reception for those.
Cooper Kupp had like a 70-yard touchdown where he just like he caught like a ball like over the middle and like sprinted down the left sideline. And like one of the Saints defenders made this like pathetic attempt at a tackle and tried to shove him out of bounds, and it just didn't work. Like, yeah, that was pretty fluky.
Yeah, I have Brandon Cooks with a long reception of 48 in that game. Robert Woods is 19, Gerald Everett 20, Tyler Higbee 33. So like, it's not abnormal necessarily, but you know, there's a path for him to come through at 8,000. So I think he's very much in play. As for, you know, you sort of asked how often I can justify him. Probably about 15 to 20% of my lineups.
I think I can go about the same. Most of my quarterback exposure will be between Breeze and Mahomes, and they're going to be on like basically every roster that's not Goff. Cause I don't see myself using a lot of Tom Brady, which could be a mistake. But I think that does allow me to get 15 to 20% of Jared Goff. And I think that will be overweight relative to the field, even though like there are only four quarterbacks in play. So I think that's where I'd wind up there. Let's talk about the tight ends before we move on to the Saints and, or the Chiefs and the Patriots. Because if you're not using Travis Kelce on this slate, it's then Gronk. And then just a bunch of value plays. And like Gronk's 56, he's kind of a value play, but he kind of plays like one too. So let's talk about the tight ends in this game. We got Benjamin Watson, Josh Hill, Tyler Higbee, Gerald Everett. Looking back to last week, Everett ran 13 routes in the divisional round. Tyler Higbee ran 9. And that led to 4 targets for Higbee compared to 2 for Everett. But the Rams did use their tight ends in the first game against the Saints. I think Higbee caught a screen, which turned into a decent little play. Everett had a touchdown in that one. As far as the Saints go, Josh Hill ran 19 routes last week, according to Pro Football Focus. Ben Watson ran 15. Hill had 3 targets. Watson had 1. Watson had a good game against the Rams back in week 9. 4 receptions, 62 yards, and a touchdown. But since that time, I think Hill has moved past him in the pass catching tight end depth charts. So I think that bodes better for Josh Hill than it does for Watson himself. So if I'm ranking these value tight ends, I kind of want to just go with the guy with the highest touchdown equity. That's Josh Hill, because he is on the team I expect to score more points. So I think I rank them Josh Hill, followed by Everett, followed by Higbee, followed by Watson. Are you okay with these guys, Brandon? And which one is your favorite of that group?
I think I actually might prefer the Rams tight ends by a tad.
Okay.
I'm not necessarily, I guess I should just follow the tight end sort of flow chart with Hill being at home and being favored. I mean, he did have 3 targets last week, ran 48% of the routes, but I actually have him at negative air yards from the play-by-play.
7 total yards on 3 catches.
So I don't really care for that much. But for Higbee and Everett, Higbee had 2 deep targets last week. Each of these guys had an end zone target last week. That's at least something more that I can cling to than Josh Hill just being a body on the field for the Saints. So I think that's like a bit of a tiebreaker for me.
Okay, I think that's fair. And I've used Everett and Higbee more than I should have, I would say, recently. Everett, no catches last week on his 2 targets. He had 1 target in week 17, no catches. But he was getting used before that, and I think that that was encouraging for me at least. So I'm not opposed to the Rams tight ends by any means. I'm going to use a lot of all 3 of these guys, but I think Josh Hill may wind up having the slight edge. Brandon, before we move on, we got to get our favorite game stacks from this game. I want to hear yours first. If you want to give one chalky one and one off the board one, what are your favorite game stacks here?
I forgot to jot these down, so I'm going to have to go on the fly. If I had to do like a safer game stack, it's going to just be like loading up on the obvious plays. So yeah. Breeze, Kamara, Gurley. And then probably realistically, I think Brandon Cooks is still affordable in that sort of game stack at 6,900. And then I guess sort of a punt with Josh Hill, because you're gonna have to load up on both of these games, so your stacks are gonna grow.
Right. My chalky one would be Breeze, Kamara, Gurley, Ginn, and then if I go with Kamara and Gurley, I probably can't afford Michael Thomas because I do want to get Damian Williams in there pretty often. So probably Breeze, Gurley, Kamara, Ginn. But my less conventional one, and I think that This is actually, it's not wonky, because if you're game stacking this game, you're assuming it's the closer game between the two. And what that does is implies that the Rams score points. If the Rams score points, Jared Goff will probably score points. So I think Goff at $8,000 makes a lot of sense when you're game stacking this game. So give me Goff, give me Gurley. So again, no Sheldon Rankins. I'm expecting Gurley's workload to increase for this weekend. And then still give me Kamara, still give me Ginn, but then I think I actually have a chance to get up to Michael Thomas in that scenario too. So what about you for a potentially less conventional stack? For me, it's just going Goff over Breeze, essentially.
So a sneakier way could be still, I mean, obviously you can assume the Rams win and go that way, but maybe a stack where you assume that the Saints win, but instead of going with Alvin Kamara, you take Mark Ingram and Michael Thomas. That way you know, if the Saints get like build a lead without Alvin Kamara, you'd have to think that those two are involved. Of course it could be Ted Ginn, but I think maybe Ingram Thomas, and then you run it back with Jared Goff, who's sort of point chasing, which is not the best recipe for fantasy success, but in a single game, it can help. So then in that instance, I would think Todd Gurley would probably see a lot of targets out of the backfield. And then probably some like deep looks to Brandon Cooks could work.
Okay. Looks to Cooks. Revenge game. So we got all the factors going there. Also a Marcus Peters revenge game, because Sean Payton was talking some smack on Marcus Peters after their first game. So a lot of revenge narratives here in play. Overall, we both think the Saints win, but think the Rams are very much in play for DFS. With the NFL playoffs winding down, do not forget about FanDuel's new small fixtures, including both single games, second half only, and even fourth quarter only slates. Love contests running for every playoff game now through the Super Bowl, starting this Sunday with the conference championships. To see the games, go to the FanDuel lobby, click on single game, and check out the various slates. FanDuel.com. For second half only, fourth quarter only, and all those slates to get your NFL fix this weekend. Let's move now to the Patriots at the Chiefs. The total here back up to 56, open to 57, went down to 55 because of weather concerns. Is bet back up to 56. The Chiefs favored by 3. The weather, not as bad as it initially looked. 21 degrees at kickoff, and the wind speed's projected at 5 miles per hour right now. Again, I will always care more about wind than I care about temperature. Even if the temperature is going to be low, I'd still like this game. So with the temperature going back up, wind speeds being low at 5 miles per hour, we're good to go here. Injury notes for this one, Spencer Ware still dealing with a hamstring injury. He was limited in Wednesday's practice, did not play last week, has not played since week 14 or 15. Sammy Watkins and Eric Berry, though, did practice in full on Wednesday. Watkins played a ton of snaps last week, so it's good to see him not having any setbacks and being good to go. Eric Berry missed last week, but it looks like he could be back for this one, which would be at least a minor upgrade for the Chiefs defense. I wouldn't go crazy for it because Berry has barely played this year, but you know, at least worth noting that he could be out there to face Tom Brady. Brandon, we both think the Chiefs should be favored. We take the points here. What is your overall thought on this game from a DFS perspective?
Yeah, this one is one of those that could be against the Patriots in the playoffs, against you know, Andy Reid in the playoffs, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, not the most extensive playoff history, but I still do think the Chiefs win this one. The 3-point spread here hasn't budged. About 55% of the bets of late, of course, as I mentioned before, coming in on the Chiefs to cover. The over under starting to trend back up a bit with the news that the Arctic blast, I think.
I think it's the polar vortex is back.
No, the polar vortex was a few years ago.
No, it's back.
It's back.
Because I'm getting 15 inches of snow on Saturday night, Brandon, so I know this polar vortex is back. I am very excited for this weekend.
Well, either way, the weather in Kansas City doesn't seem to be quite as bad as it was expected to be earlier on. So
it seems better than it was last week, even.
Yeah, I mean, there was snow on the ground to start that game last week. Patrick Mahomes still did a few things. So yeah, look, these teams played in week six. It was a 43-40 win for New England in New England. This game, of course, not in New England. Josh Gordon played. He had 9 targets in that game. So that is a sort of a big variable there. Tom Brady's been like good on the road, not great. 0.22 passing net expected points per drop back with a 50% success rate, 7.31 yards per attempt, which is actually below league average, which is around 7.5. In his 4 games on the road against top half pass defenses, he's still been pretty solid, 0.21 passing net expected points per drop back, 54% success rate. So by no means do I think that this is going to be a runaway, but whenever you implant the Chiefs defense, getting that upgrade at home, and the Patriots defense faltering a bit because they go from Foxborough to Kansas City, I think that's enough to give the Chiefs the edge.
I would agree. I want to talk more about Tom Brady on the road because, you know, in the game since Josh Gordon left the team, Brady's been okay. He's been at 0.23 passing net expected points per dropback. That's an above average number, and it's good. Just not quite Patrick Mahomes good. And importantly, all 3 of those games have been at home. He now goes on the road. And on top of that, Brady has thrown deep just 13 times out of 100 total attempts since Gordon left the team. They don't really have a deep receiver left on this roster. And I think what that really does is it hurts Brady's upside from a DFS perspective and really does sour me about using him. So, like, if I'm not – like, Mahomes and Breeze are in a tier of themselves, by themselves, I should say, from a DFS perspective for this week, I favor them heavily. But I think I also favor Jared Goff pretty heavily over Tom Brady. And again, I know, no shock, Jim likes Jared Goff. What a shocker here. But I think that because Brady is going on the road, does not have that deep threat in his offense, I am inclined to be very wary of him for DFS. Let's talk about that Patriots defense too on the road, because on the road this year, they have allowed 0.18 passing net expected points per dropback, which is worse than average. At home, they're a negative 0.02. So a huge difference for them going on the road. And what's interesting about that is that their defense on the road includes games against Blake Bortles, where he went for 377 and 4 tutties. Mitch Trubisky, 333 yards and a touchdown, inflated by a Hail Mary, but whatever. Derek Anderson threw for 290 yards against this defense when they were on the road. Marcus Mariota, the best quarterback in football, went for 228 passing yards on just 24 attempts. Josh McCown, he didn't do a whole lot, but like, you know, whatever. Ryan Tannehill, 248 yards on 19 attempts while playing with one bum leg. Like, they're bad. They're a bad defense on the road, and I think that that's why I like the Chiefs quite a bit. So, Brandon, I know we have this Patriots magic stuff that goes on, but I feel like if I were placing confidence in, like, bets for this weekend, my biggest confidence would be on the Chiefs -3. I don't want to get overzealous in that because I know what the Patriots can do, but I think with this game being Kansas City, the Chiefs defense is also phenomenal in Kansas City, a 9.6% sack rate there. Their sack rate is 5.7% on the road. So I think the Chiefs have a chance to roll in this game, which is to me why I love Damian Williams. Am I being irrational in this?
It sounds to me like you don't believe in the Patriots, that you hate the Patriots.
And I took Edelman's advice.
You think the Patriots are terrible. I don't even know how they're here.
I'm not correcting you on this because it's pretty much exactly what I said. Usually I correct you and pump the brakes, but you're pretty much regurgitating what I said.
So. Yeah, there's a lot of overreaction about anything critical about the Patriots right now. I mean, if you're being objective, the Chiefs look to be the better team. And you can factor in, you know, how angry Tom Brady might be or how much, you know, how many, you know, playoff wins he has or whatever. But look, you rattled off a lot of reasons why the Chiefs are in a good spot to come through here. The Patriots don't really have a pass rush. In that week 6 game, they hit Patrick Mahomes 3 times on his 36 attempts. Like, it really does feel like a spot where Patrick Mahomes can just build a lead here. The Patriots can chip away. They're going to, you know, they threw it to James White 17 times last week. Julian Edelman 13 times. They can throw it underneath and sort of chip away. The Chiefs cannot stop the rush. They either can't or don't care to. They're 32nd in adjusted rush defense and success rate allowed to running backs. So that could lead to Sony Michel sort of chipping away. And look, over a large sample, running the ball to control the clock doesn't really work. In a single game, it can. The Patriots have that ability this week against the Chiefs. But, I'm with you. I feel more confident about this game than I do about the Saints and the Rams.
Yeah. So I think if we're thinking about this game from like a game planning perspective, if I were Bill Belichick, and I would never I can't predict this dude because he's so much smarter than me. And like I acknowledge that. But like if you're Belichick, I think he's self-aware enough to know that like the Rams or the Chiefs are favored in this game for a reason. So like, it would make sense for him to run Sony Michel and try to increase the variance in this game, you know, reduce the sample size and keep this game close. I'm just not sure that'll be able to work given how good the Chiefs offense is. They're going to score points in this game. So I think the way that I handle Sony Michel for this week is I set in my mind the odds the Patriots win. And on number fire right now, they have 31% win odds compared to the Chiefs at 69%. So like, yeah, if I assume that the Patriots win 30% of the time and I want to have Sony Michel in 80% of my lineups where I assume the Patriots win and maybe 5% where they don't win, that's kind of how I set my exposure to Sony Michel. Whereas the Damian Williams, I don't really need to do that. And he is actually cheaper than Sony Michel. In that divisional round, Williams, 25 carries, 6 targets, and played 75% of the snaps. And he looked really good. And this Patriots defense is better against the pass than they are against the rush. They, on the road, allow 4.83 yards per carry to running backs. That's 4.53 at home. I think Damian Williams is my favorite play on the slate, regardless of position, $7,200. I'm going to stack him with the Chiefs defense at $4,400 quite a bit. Do you like Damian Williams as much as I do?
Yeah, he's my number one running back for the week, price considered. I don't know if he's mispriced, but he's cheap.
He's mispriced relative to other running backs, a.k.a. Sony Michel, who's probably going to score 4 touchdowns on Sunday and make me look really dumb. But again, I'm going to use him just in my lineups where I assume the Patriots win.
Yeah, he had 8 red zone carries last week. That's just insane.
He's also legit good. So I never want to like actually talk bad about him because like he's a fun football player to watch. Sony Michel's good at football. Just the way he's used isn't always conducive to DFS success.
Yeah, the thing too to remember is, you know, you can kind of look at Sony Michel's snap rate, but that's not really indicative of how it gets used because he touches the ball on like 65% of his snaps because they just, when he's on the field, they basically just hand him the ball.
And it's so wild that teams can't stop it because like their rush rate when he's on the field is like 70% and their pass rate when James White is out there is like 80%, but teams still can't stop it, which is a credit to the Patriots and how good their personnel is and how good their scheme is. Like it's insane to me that teams can't stop that, but they can't.
Well, maybe they'll draft a first round running back who can do both of those things next year.
As a person who has dynasty investment in Sony Michel, I'm hoping that he is that guy.
Yeah, but I mean, okay. So to get to Damian Williams, that 75% snap rate, that's a workhorse like mm-hmm. rate. Assuming Spencer Ware doesn't come back and, you know, play a heavy snap rate, which I don't expect would happen, Damian Williams or Alvin Kamara, you know, to lead in snap rate, who would you take?
Assuming no Spencer Ware?
Sure.
Williams? If Ware plays, I think that Williams' snap rate is lower than Kamara's. I'm expecting Kamara to be around 70%. And I think Williams goes from 75% without Ware to maybe like 60 or 65%, but I would still use him at 60 or 65%.
Yeah, but still pretty close. And yeah, I'm not saying that Damian Williams is Alvin Kamara in the Superdome. I'm not saying that, but you know, price considered, that's a great workload for Damian.
$900 goes a long way on this slate.
Yeah, it does. It sure does. So I think Damian Williams, I don't know if he's my favorite just overall play, but I guess by, yeah, he, well, I might have to put Travis Kelce there just because he's so far and away better than all the other tight end options. But if it's not Kelce, it's going to be Damian Williams.
So talking about Kelce and these Chiefs pass catchers, how are you handling them given what we know about the Patriots defense?
Yeah, so I just want to look last week with Sammy Watkins back. Sammy Watkins ran 98% of the routes last week, according to Pro Football Focus. He had 8 targets, just 48 air yards on those, but did get a red zone target there. Travis Kelce ran 85% of the routes, 10 targets, 110 air yards. 3 of 9 deep targets went to Travis Kelce. And then Tyreek Hill ran 81% of the routes, 13 targets for him, 190 air yards, 6 deep targets. We saw Patrick Mahomes throw deep quite a bit in this first matchup. Actually, if you remember, Kareem Hunt had some downfield looks. He actually got airmailed on one that was going to be a walk-in touchdown if Mahomes connected with him. So that's another thing.
I think he had another one that was wiped out by penalty too, if I recall correctly.
It's possible. I know he got airmailed.
I remember that one. I know which one you're talking about. Yeah.
And I know he caught one as well, but there might have been a third that I don't recall. But yeah, so that's another plus in the column for Damian Williams, who ran 57% of the routes last week. And then after Hill, it was Chris Conley at 68%, if you're looking more at like the smaller slates. But Sammy Watkins, I think, per dollar is going to be one of the best plays of the week. The problem for me is that we talked about this before the show. If you're looking at the pricing, it's Brandon Cooks at 6,900 and then Sammy Watkins at 5,600. And if you can't afford Brandon Cooks and you have like $6,000 for your final wide receiver, you're just going to play Sammy Watkins, and that's going to lead you really, really high ownership for Sammy Watkins. So that does worry me a bit. But yeah, I think per dollar, his workload was fantastic last week. And then you look at Tyreek Hill, 8,400. We know what he can do. The 6 deep targets and 190 air yards. I don't care how. I need to make sure that I have some Tyreek Hill exposure because he could break this slate open.
Absolutely. And we've seen that so many times this year. And in the game against New England this year, Hill went bananas. In that game against New England, 12 targets, 142 yards, 3 touchdowns, 35.7 FanDuel points. That was not his highest scoring game of the year, by the way. He had 38.5 in that game against the Rams, 38.8 against the Chargers. Maybe he just likes facing playoff teams. I don't know. But like the upside of him is insane. And so while I prefer Travis Kelce, I know I consciously need to get a lot of Tyreek Hill because he'll be dead in the water if he pulls out a 90-yard touchdown again, because he can always do that. As far as Kelce goes, I can afford him because of all the salary-saving wide receivers on this slate, and I would like to do so. I think that the question I have is, if it's not Kelce, do you drop all the way down to the punting options, or do you plug in Rob Gronkowski? Gronkowski in the 3 games since Josh Gordon left the team, 6% of the targets. He has 8% of the deep targets and 0% of the red zone targets. It is a small sample, but those are very concerning. And watching Gronk this year, hashtag watch the tape, it's been painful at times. But we have seen him have 107 yards almost in the past month. He had 107 against Miami in that game where they had the Hail Mary, and that was on December 9th. So can you use Rob Gronkowski, or are you just punting if you don't use Kelce?
So, I mean, I'm not going to have zero Rob Gronkowski.
Correct.
But hit 1 target last week, 6 air yards. He ran 86% of the routes, though, to rank him 3rd on the team. Played 93% of the snaps. So his route rate is sort of back up to where it was sort of earlier in the year. That's nice to see. The Chiefs, not a very tough tight end defense. They're actually just more vulnerable in the middle, the slot and through tight ends, than they are on the perimeter. That's their strength. So they're actually 28th in fantasy points per target allowed to tight ends, 19th in target success rate allowed. So sure, there's a path to a big game from Rob Gronkowski, but I I can't imagine much more than like 10 to 15% Gronk.
I was gonna say 10% too. Like, it could happen because I think the Patriots will have to throw in this game, and they're more likely to take him out of the garage given the fact that it's a must-win game. But
So they played the Chargers last week. The Chargers do have good tight end defense. They're one of the best in the league. But I mean, you look at those short, you know, targets, and Gronk can get deep targets when he's healthy. But if you look at, okay, so they attacked the middle of the field. Julian Edelman had 13 targets last week. James White had 17. Gronk had one. So it's not even like, you know,
their game plan was do something that should benefit Gronk.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. You summed it up for me a lot better than I did.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's just, that's, I think that is very concerning. I kind of glossed over Sammy Watkins, so I'm going to go back to him quickly. Sorry. But you talked about him, and I agree with your thoughts, where you said you think he'll be very popular. But I think I view him similar to Ted Ginn, where he'll be popular, but that popularity is justified given his salary. Because Watkins, $5,600, in the games where he has played at least half the snaps, Watkins has 20% of the Chiefs' overall targets. Hill is at 23%, Kelsey 26%. And Watkins has 20% of the red zone targets. And when you think about Bill Belichick and the way he schemes, we always know he wants to make the other team, and this is a term that Michael Lombardi uses on The Ringer, he wants to make the other team play left-handed. And if you're doing that with the Chiefs, you take away Travis Kelce, you take away Tyreek Hill, you're probably not scheming to take away Sammy Watkins. So I think that, like, if I'm thinking about this game from a game planning perspective inside Bill Belichick's head, it leads to a lot of Damian Williams and potentially a lot of Sammy Watkins. So popular, but justifiably so, is what I would say about Sammy Watkins. Let's talk about the Patriots here, Brandon. James White last week, no carries, but 17 targets, played 46% of the snaps in a game where the Patriots led from start to finish. And that's a game script that doesn't set up for James White, but he was still out there and still got a ton of volume. This Chiefs defense can be beaten by pass-catching backs. They've allowed a ton of yardage to backs as receivers this year. James White at $7,700. I have him fourth in my running back rankings behind Williams, Kamara, Gurley. Where do you view him relative to those guys? And is he fourth for you, or is he a bit higher?
Yeah, he's fourth. Same rankings at the top for running backs. The Chiefs are 27th in target success rate allowed to running backs, so they can give up production out of the backfield for sure. We know James White really not going to play 60% of the snaps or anything right. like that, but he ran 75% of the routes last week. Of course, the insane target total, 4 red zone targets as well for James White. I mean, his involvement is enough where you'd think that even if they're ahead, as you sort of alluded to, you know, last week he got that usage. And if they trail, he's almost like game script proof. Of course, his ceiling is not nearly as high as some of these other running backs who are going to get all the red zone carries. I mean, he didn't even get a carry last week. It's not really what he does anymore. So that's problematic, but I do have him fourth because I think the matchup is just so good. And his usage last week was very, very good for what he does.
If we look at the games since Josh Gordon left, James White has 26% of the Patriots' targets with 30% of their red zone targets in that time. I believe there have been 20 or 15 red zone targets in that time. So pretty decent sample, and White has a lot of them. Edelman, though, has 29% of the targets, 46% of the deep targets, and 15% of the red zone targets. I guess the problem that I have with Edelman is that he's $7,900, and I love Kamara, I love Michael Thomas, I love Travis Kelce. Using Edelman costs me one of those guys. I'm going to use him, but it's really hard when the opportunity cost for him is so high, which might lead me towards a little bit more Chris Hogan. Hogan in that time has 16% of the team's targets, 31% of the deep targets, 25% of the red zone targets. So he's kind of similar to Josh Reynolds, where he's getting overall targets, looks down the field, looks in the red zone. And he did have one game with no targets, so note that. But Hogan is also $5,200. This is really a death wish, Brandon, but I think I'm going to have more Hogan than I have Edelman. Where do you lie on these Patriots receivers?
Well, a small cat just like broke a lot of stuff while you're talking about Julian Edelman. So
oh,
I think she's with you, where she's off of Edelman, despite playing 96% of the snaps last week, 100% of the routes, 13 targets, a team high of 108 air yards, 3 deep targets, 2 red zone targets. It was a very, very good workload. And as I sort of mentioned before with Gronk, like, you'd have to think that Edelman is sort of he's got the best matchup here, playing inside. The Chiefs are much better on the perimeter. I do think that Chris Hogan, though, is interesting. I actually have him highlighted as well. He ran every single route last week as well. Just 27 air yards, but 3 red zone targets I have him with. So, look, we're talking 2 games, or if you're playing the single game, sure, Chris Hogan can either catch a long pass. We've seen him do that lately. With the red zone work, he could score a touchdown. And, I mean, that might be all you need. So I think that he's definitely on my radar. I don't know if I'd go so far as to say I have more Chris Hogan than Julian Edelman, primarily for the fact that between Sammy Watkins, potentially we glossed over Philip Dorsett, who did run 61% of the routes last week and had 5 targets, 68 air yards to rank 2nd on the Patriots. I think he's playable. Then Josh Reynolds, Ted Ginn, Hogan's there, Keith Kirkwood. So I don't really think Chris Hogan is going to be my favorite play in that range often enough where I actually roster him more than Julian Edelman.
So I think when I'm looking at these guys, like, straight up, like, from a market share perspective, Reynolds, Ginn, and Hogan are all in the exact same tier from a usage perspective. I think Sammy Watkins is safer than them because of his overall market share, but, like, they get more deep looks than he does. So I kind of think they're all in the same tier, and that allows me to kind of just use whichever one fits with the rosters I'm constructing. And I'm kind of willing to just mix and match with them. So Hogan's not going to stand out in that tier, but he is a guy I will filter in that salary tier. And I think that's where I wind up on him. Philip Dorsett, you mentioned, in the time since Josh Gordon left the team, has 20% of the team's red zone targets. He has 10% of the overall targets and 8% of the deep targets. But the problem I have is that he is 55, which is $300 more than Hogan. I think I will still have him because, like you said, like, it could always happen. And he did have a touchdown last week, 5 total targets. I think he matches up better with the secondary than some other guys. So I could see using Dorsett, but I think he would rank behind Reynolds, Ginn, Hogan for me.
Yeah, I have the same thing.
Okay. I think that's all I have for this one. Any more notes for you?
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
You're building one lineup this week.
Sure.
Are you making sure you play Travis Kelce?
So my one lineup right now, like my single bullet lineup, has Travis Kelce in it. I'm not standing firm in that, though, so I guess to answer your question, no, but I would very much like to.
Well, yeah, you'd like to, but is it – because, I mean, if you want to play Patrick Mahomes, you want to play Kamara, Damian Williams, potentially Todd Gurley or, you know, James White – it's not, it's certainly not impossible to play Travis Kelce, but you're basically not punting with all of your receivers, but you're close
I
to
am.
It.
No, I am. Like, in that lineup, because I think that the thing that I'm prioritizing, if I'm making one lineup, is the running backs that I want. And when I do that, it makes it very hard to pay up a receiver. It's kind of, I can pay up at one receiver slot or I can pay up for Travis Kelce. Right now, I'm leaning Kelce, but that could change. Just because Kelsey's cheaper than the high-end receivers. He's $7,400. Edelman is $79. Tyreek Hill, $84. And Michael Thomas, $88. Like, that's a pretty good salary savings. So if I'm choosing to spend up on one of those guys, it's going to be Kelce for me. So I prioritize him less than I prioritize the running backs that I want, but I prioritize him more than the wide receivers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. What about for you? Are you locking in Kelce and going from there?
I mean, look, if I'm like building one lineup in a single entry, I guess not. Well, I don't want to say that because I don't want to, you know, factor in ownership here.
Yeah.
I do think I need to pay up for Kelce.
You prioritize him over the running backs.
Or at least one running
back. Capital T, capital R, capital B. The running backs, for me, are the top 3 guys of Williams, Gurley, and Kamara.
Yeah. So,
or white. I mean, I put white in there too, I guess.
Yeah. So if you go like girly down to white, you can play Travis Kelce without too much of a
too much problem. Tomfoolery.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't tough. Know. That's why I wanted to ask because yeah. I always, you know, I say, yeah, I want to prioritize Kelce if I can, but then you got to look long and hard, you know. Mm-hmm. Not, you know, Damian Williams or Travis Kelce, like, what are you doing? Of course, it's going to be Damian Williams. So,
right. I would agree with that, too. All right. So, I have to ask you two questions. We'll do first, I want to ask you about your favorite game stacks in this game. And then I want to ask which game you're prioritizing. Like, if you're building a single lineup, actually, let's do that first since we were talking about, you know, a single lineup. Are you prioritizing a game stack of Saints Rams or Chiefs Patriots?
It's Saints Rams.
I would agree because it's indoors.
I think that it plays. I think it can play closer for a lot of different reasons. Mm-hmm. Even though I do think the Saints win, it's indoors. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried at all about the weather, and I think that sort of one of the teams in this, you know, Chiefs Patriots game could really try to slow things down. I think the Rams would try to slow things down too if they could, but I would definitely prioritize the first game on the slate.
And as a result of that, Drew Brees is my quarterback one for this slate because I prefer that game. All right, favorite game stack, Patriots, Chiefs, what you got?
Probably going like right down the middle with it for the my favorite one, Mahomes, Damian Williams, James White, Travis Kelce, and the Chiefs. I think that's affordable and doable.
I agree with that. That's a really good stack to me. If I needed to save salary, I could bump off of White and go down to Hogan. And I'd be willing to do that, but I don't think I necessarily need to. All right. Crazier game stack for you.
How about something like still Patrick Mahomes, because I don't think Tom Brady has a huge game, even if they win. So Mahomes, Sony Michel.
Agreed.
Damian Williams still, because I think he'll play regardless of the script. Maybe Julian Edelman. Because I think he's a bit in a weird pricing standpoint where he'll be a little bit overlooked and could still get some big looks. And then Tyreek Hill. Mm-hmm. I think it could maybe Patriots get out ahead a little bit with Sony Michel and Julian Edelman.
Yep.
And then the Chiefs just have to do whatever it takes to get back into it.
And I think that that's the point where if you're going trying to be a little bit weirder, you go Tyreek Hill over Travis Kelce and you plug in Demetrius Harris, Brandon.
Oh, I didn't want to bring him up. I thought it was too much of a...
Nah.
Yeah.
He's on my note sheet. 13 routes run in the divisional round, and he had one target. He gets some deep targets.
46% of the snaps, too.
Yeah. Like, if I'm going to talk up Josh Hill, like, I should probably talk up Demetrius Harris. So, I think in my weird game stack, after I go Mahomes, Michelle... and Hill, I need to save some money, so I'm going to go Demetrius Harris at $4,000, the tight end for the Chiefs. I should mention what position he is, because people may not know who this guy is. But I think that I will have him in a non-zero number of lineups this week.
Yeah, I was like, I think he's a bit too off the wall, and I don't want any listener to feel overconfident in Demetrius Harris.
Oh, yeah, don't feel overconfident. You can put him in, like, one lineup. And you know,
that's also why I take a step back off of Chris Conley whenever he actually got into, like, maybe I should play this guy territory.
I had him in a lineup earlier this morning. I quickly got off of it, but it was there briefly.
Yes, I mean, he's, like, I'm not going to be over... Like, I'm not gonna have a ton of him, but I mean, if you really do pay up everywhere else, you kind of have like 5,100 ish for your three receivers, and that's going to require someone below 5K. And I'm certainly not above playing Chris Conley to get to the Super Bowl.
I know you aren't. That is 100% for sure. And I think that like there's a chance he catches a touchdown, and that's basically all you need at $4,700. So it's not not the worst idea in the world. That's what I would say about that. Brandon, we talked about both these games. I think I'm excited to watch the football this weekend. It should be some pretty good games. Hopefully, I hope they're tight at least, because I want the good games, and I really would love to see anybody but the Patriots in the Super Bowl, because I just want to watch these offenses feast. So any final thoughts from you before we close up shop for today?
This is a two-game slate. You got four teams to pick from. something weird's going to happen. But you don't really have to get, you don't have to play like Daryl Williams and hope that he, you know, vultures two touchdowns in order to have a good lineup. If anything, people might get too creative here.
Yeah.
And then you can build some like smart lineups and just sort of ride those up to cashing in tournaments. Even if you don't bank it, you can kind of be profitable in these like small slates if you're smart.
Yeah, you can build a lot of lineups here that make sense. You don't have to get crazy. And this is from someone who is, again, like prioritizing running backs. Even while doing so, you can make smart lineups, I think. So don't lose your process while building lineups for this weekend. I think that's probably the best way to put it there. We do have more podcasts coming your way here on the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed next week. PGA Podcast, as always, going up on Tuesday, and a little Pro Bowl single game preview coming up on Thursday, discussing strategies for the Pro Bowl from a single game perspective, and letting you know some guys we may target if you are degenerate enough to play the Pro Bowl single game slate, which we absolutely will be. Super Bowl preview will be up. Not sure when, but it will be up at some point prior to the Super Bowl from a single game perspective. I do.
Well, you can do it after.
Yeah. I mean, I feel pretty good about, you know, my picks at that point. So let's roll with that. You can get all those podcasts by subscribing to the Number Fire Daily Fantasy Podcast feed. That is on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud again, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and the TuneIn app. Brandon, people have questions for you on Twitter. Where can they find you there?
I am at Gadula13, GDULA13.
And I am at Jim Sanes, JimSanes. You can also follow the Number Fire Podcast Network at Number Fire Pods, PODS as in podcast. We do want to thank you all for tuning in for today. Good luck with the conference championships. Have fun watching the games, and we'll talk to you again soon. This has been the Heat Check Fantasy Podcast, powered by Number Fire.